Share right now. Let me know if y'all can see my screen.
I can see it.
Okay, awesome. I'm just gonna go
Looks great.
into okay. Just gonna go into full presentation. And if anything happens with y'all's ability to see it, or if I start getting a bad connection, just let me know. So once again, Marco, Joshua, thank you all so much for having me today. I see some familiar names in the roster. Mohan from Chain Yard was actually just in one of our working group meetings, which wrapped about 5 minutes ago. So it's nice to see some bit of members that are also represented in the Hyperledger Special Interest Supply Chain Group. Obviously, and this won't come to any surprise to those in this meeting, but Hyperledger's adoption among major enterprises has just been spectacular, and I'm really excited. And hopefully, I can hear from the group later in the meeting about kind of the latest developments and what y'all are seeing as the platform continues to develop. I recently have been hearing a lot of interesting things about Hyperledger Avalon and Hyperledger Belsu instances. So I would love to have a little conversation after I get done with my presentation. So I'll just kick things off. So I try not to use blockchain in the title slides of my presentations unless the hosting organization really insists on it. What I really think all of this is about the journey that enterprises and customers are going on around the digitization of freight and transportation. And so, we've got these two ugly D words that are used in all these presentations, digitization and disruption. But, I think this is really all incumbent on moving away from legacy and analog processes that create so much gunk in the pipes and really slow down the efficient transfer of information that actually drives the real-world physical processes associated to the movements of goods between place of manufacture and place of consumption, and even, kind of into the reverse logistics world and the ancillary data and oversight and regulatory processes associated with global commerce. And so BITA is, it's got blockchain and transportation in its acronym, but that might be a little bit constricting in terms of what we're really trying to accomplish. And I kind of frame it as the creation, the collaborative creation of a global vernacular around the data components that really comprise commerce. And so, BITA, as Marco was saying, is still kind of a toddler. We came about in August of 2017, originally as the Blockchain and Trucking Alliance, focused on figuring out ways to optimize data sharing across over-the-road trucking operators in the United States. At the time, the cryptocurrencies were just exploding, and there was a huge amount of interest and, frankly, probably a fear of missing out, which drove a huge amount of interest towards the organization. And it quickly moved towards the Blockchain and Transport more broadly alliance, where we brought in representatives from all the different transportation modes and ancillary service providers. The community represents not only trucking, but rail, air, ocean, last mile technology providers, bankers, insurers, regulators of all sorts, and many, many different types of technology providers, whether those are actual protocol builders or service providers or major enterprises that are actually looking to leverage this technology for the physical movement of goods. And so, the actual community is probably among the larger alliances, commercial alliances, globally focused on implementing this technology, and it really ranges a spectrum of types of participants. Everybody from pure kind of technology builders to those physical movers of goods. And it's this community that I think really drives the power of these standards that we're looking to collaboratively build. And so we often use this word coopetition, where, you know, among the names on this screen, you see a lot of fierce competitors who otherwise probably wouldn't want to be working very closely with each other. But, you know, the almost cliche statement around blockchain development is blockchain is a team sport. And, you know, it's really a collaborative effort that's driving the standards development process at BITA. And so this is a little bit of a timeline of how we've gotten to the point where we are. Like I was saying, we were started in August of 2017. Later that year, we held our first symposium, which was kind of a gathering of the initial community, trying to figure out what was it that we were really going to try to accomplish and tackle. The community created some think tanks, which really narrowed down the focus of our proposed work towards the tracking documentation and visibility functions that we could associate to supply chain and transportation movements. In summer of last year, we really kicked off the standards development work. So in August of last year, we kicked off our first working groups working towards specifications around tracking documentation and the creation of a location data specification. The work is continued to develop, and we've built out a few more working groups focused on the development of specifications around information for party. So who's involved in the movement of goods or the receiving of goods shipment. So what's in the box is a simple way of thinking about it. It's actual information about the shipment. Party and shipment information plus location information gives you all the necessary data components for a bill of lading. And so we're working on building a specification for bill of lading, which kind of within the community, we're talking about calling it an EUBL, so an electronic universal bill of lading, which we think will be applicable across all transport modes and really drive some value creation in the space. And so party and shipment specifications are working towards and have provided draft specifications to their oversight technical committee. So I'm really excited about that work. And as I was saying, bill of lading is highly dependent on their finalization. But as we move towards finalizing those, I really expect by the end of this year to have party, shipment, and bill of lading finalized in addition to location, which I think is going to allow for the realization of the use of this initial glossary of specifications within real world projects in early next year. And we're working with a couple of different organizations to develop proof of concepts and pilots where we'll be able to leverage these BITA specifications. And certain BITA members are actually already either leveraging the location specification or are looking to do so shortly. So really excited about where we've come in the short time that we've been around the standards development process. And I'm sure some members on the call are familiar with this. It can be an arduous and kind of drawn out process, but I really feel like we're moving very fast. It's probably not as fast as some would like, but we're really trying to focus on quality versus speed, and definitely encourage anyone who's interested to reach out. If your company is already a member, to please get involved. It's really dependent on the talent and knowledge base that we can put against the efforts. So the more people, definitely informed individuals that we can get involved in the process, the better and the faster we can move towards the realization of this. And over the past couple months, we've really honed in through strategy sessions with our board of directors of the Standards Council, which is the side of BIDA producing these open source and royalty free data specifications on vision, a mission, and core values, which I think are going to accelerate the process as we try to grow up the organization. There's no shortage of hype out there, and I think that we're probably, you know, depending on the type of application, we're starting to see meaningful projects emerge. And at the BIDA Symposium on November 14th in Chicago, we're going to have a few member companies showcasing what I would consider meaningful projects around transportation and supply chain that are leveraging blockchain technology showcased. And so there is no shortage of hype and perhaps a dangerous amount of hype compared to actual implementation out there. And that's been good for driving awareness of the technology, but maybe creating a type of gap between what those in the C-suite with budgetary authority think is possible with the technology and what's actually implementable today. And so I think, you know, meaningful ecosystem level projects are probably 2 to 5 years out, as we can kind of see in this slide, where we're still working through kind of the education and early adoption phase. And I really feel like the industry is looking for a set of standards that will allow for honing in on collaborative efforts versus all of these individual projects running in seeming parallel to each other. So, you know, all of this gets to the other D word, you know, disruption. And there's no shortage of enterprises, you know, that are even member companies that face massive change to their existing business practices from the adoption of this technology. But I'm a firm believer that the technology is coming. And if you don't get involved, you're going to get passed by. And so, you know, it kind of goes back to that co-opetition idea of, even if you're not very interested in adopting it, it's good to have a seat at the table, understand what's coming, and help shape the narrative around how your organization will be fundamentally impacted by these changes. So I like to show this this information. This is a presentation or data from the IBM Institute of Business Value Analysis that talks about adoption across first wave industries versus the transportation space. And it's a little dated, but it's really, you know, showing kind of despite some initial reluctance, transportation professionals are going to expect this technology to start emerging by next year. And that might speak to the fact that this may have been created with more of a marketing tent in mind than an implementation point in mind. But, you know, it's getting towards Q4 of 2019. And I know we don't have a polling tool that I can use real quick, but you know, I don't think we're approaching 70% adoption across the broader transportation space. I think that perhaps a figure like that is looking at the technology and exploring it, but of actual adoption of the technology, I'd say we're probably somewhere between 10% and 20% of transportation companies that are actually looking to adopt the technology today.
Do you think this is being held back by other technology adoption? Because I constantly hear about challenges with cloud and IoT specifically in this space. Do you think that the folks that you're working with in transportation are trying to harness anything else like that first? Or is it just that they don't understand blockchain unto itself and that it's taking time?
I don't think that it's a lack of understanding within the talent at these companies. I think one of the biggest hurdles is the legacy technology and the associated capital spend towards those technologies that drives most of the movement of goods around the world.
Gotcha.
Know, or for the the sake of raising the blood pressure in the room, I don't know how many of y'all have to deal with EDI implementations, and you know, EDI is still the backbone for the global economy, and you know, is developed out of processes, you know, to support the movement of goods in World War II, and then actual EDI, you know, coming about in the late 60s, we're talking about, you know, 60-year-old technology. And the majority, I wouldn't, maybe not use the majority, but a significant portion of the world's economy is still operating with the unidirectional nature of EDI technology, which being driven by mainstream and mainframe computers operating on green screen interfaces. It's really quite a leap to go from that type of technology to, you know, cloud and API and blockchain. You know, people are still trying to wrap their head around API, and this is really, you know, taking it to the whole.
Gotcha. So I guess for the folks on the phone call, you know, a lot of times we hear a lot about how IoT and other technologies are big factors around blockchain implementation. For anybody who's familiar with some of the more niche spaces of supply chain, for most companies that are shipping physical products, their EDI messages are what run everything. Their electronic delivery instructions, messages they get from UPS and FedEx and all the other folks in their supply chain around how the physical goods are being moved and shipped from space to space and tracking them. And this is what Pat Patrick's talking about. It's a huge issue in terms of how we modernize that architecture, and we bring things like blockchain to bear at the same time.
That's right. And, you know, that's something that is both, you know, a challenge and an opportunity for us. And, you know, organizations like GS1, which have done a fantastic job of building out standards for commerce associated to EDI transactions, we're talking with them at high levels around how we can work together to not reinvent the wheel where it's not necessary, and adopt existing highly adopted standards and move them towards this blockchain paradigm. So, you know, it's important that we're collaborative in our efforts with existing standards organizations out there. And, you know, this is not something that we'll be able to do alone, and is not going to be something that we can do with a snap of our finger. Like I said, you know, GS1 has been around since the late 60s, or maybe not that long, but since the invention of the barcode, and continues to develop. And this technology will probably similarly take decades to reach full maturity. You know, these are some of the use cases that people, executives were originally looking at. Similarly, it echoes what we were hearing in the bit of think tanks as we honed in on track and trace and visibility tools. You know, shipment status tracking, payment processing is really kind of the next level, and we're working on a smart contract specification, which we think will be the next layer, that transactional layer, to move beyond the custodial bill of lading that we're working on. But, you know, this is kind of where executives are seeing anticipated disruption. And it's some interesting data, and we're actually working with Arthur D. Little to survey the broader community about actual adoption in 2019, and how this kind of compares to some of this earlier information. Because, you know, almost all of these are right around the 50% mark, where people are expecting no anticipated disruption or only slight. From my experience and my conversations with these practitioners, I think this data is really going to change as the use cases and the implementability, that's a hard one, becomes much easier as the technology matures. And so BITA's basically got two sides of it. It's got BITA, the BITA community, which is focused on education, evangelism, hosting our two symposiums, one in spring, one in fall, and our meetups, where we bring together professionals in certain cities around the world to talk about the challenges and opportunities to the technology. And the Standards Council, which is a 501c6 trade association with a vision of providing the open source standards powering blockchain-enabled global commerce. And so going back to that slide around that community, that's where the technology professionals and actual supply chain and transportation professionals come together to duke it out, often in really challenging ways, to agree upon what is necessary to build out data specifications for the technology stacks that power the movement of goods. And so we have a number of working groups that are currently running. So party specification, shipment specification, bill of lading, and a standards review working group, which is responsible for looking at other industry standards, how we can adopt those and how we can implement our standards in proof of concept and pilot projects, are currently running. And we'd love to get y'all involved with those. The location specification published its first spec at the end of February and is currently paused, but will be restarted to implement some learnings that we've come across over the past 6 months, and also translate the existing documents for the location spec and the tracking documentation kind of profile document, which is kind of a roadmap for how we see all these data components coming together, translated through a new style guide, which we've been working on over the past couple months that we think will drive higher adoptability and of these actual specifications. I'm excited that in the next quarter, we are going to be spinning up the working group around smart contracts, one focused on equipment. So you can think of everything down to the actual automated robots that are moving goods around a warehouse, all the way up to a quarter mile long container ship, really figuring out a specification at the data level for equipment. And then commodities, which is associated to goods, particularly hazardous goods, that will need to have specialized data associated to their movement. So all of that being said, when we're developing these standards, we take in the OSI model into account and really look at every layer of this process as we go to build out our actual specifications. And what we really think about is that we're building out the infrastructure layer to this ecosystem where Hyperledger and its many different instances, R3 Corda and other types of protocols and applications like Trust Your Supplier, which Chainyard and Mohan have worked done an incredible job of pushing out. We're not focused on building an application layer. We're trying to build the pipes that are going to allow for these applications to interoperate with one another and to allow for the sharing of important data across stakeholders in these supply chains. And so when we kind of go up into the blimp and look at what we're trying to do, this is what we kind of call the tracking foundation profile, which takes a UML model and kind of breaks out the different components associated to a supply chain move. And we'll get into this a little bit more, but it breaks it out into kind of core data components and ancillary components. You'll see equipment associated in these purple ones, shipment-based information in these yellow units. The green is kind of a metadata that we're still trying to work through, but kind of brings all of these in, and there's no shortage of complication to this. And so we're really trying to get down to the core of what's necessary to provide for the data needed for these supply chain partners to interact. And when we do something, or when we're successful in defining a specification, it comes out as something like this. And they say there's beauty in simplicity, but after really duking it out for months, I can tell you it wasn't very impressive to my family when I said, you know, yay, we've got a specification. This is what it looks like. You know, they were like, this is it. But this is the result of all these different types of participants coming together to agree that this is what is necessary when they want to use a data component around location, and this will work across all of their systems. And so this is a JSON representation for location data, and is representative of the type of outputs that we're looking for when we're defining these different specifications. This is
Patrick, this is Gokul from IBM.
Hi,
quick
how are
question.
You? Yeah.
Hi, thank you. So my question, I mean, when I see this, it goes back to what the statement that you made on GS1, right? So I'll take an example, right? So from IBM Food Trust point of view, we embrace GS1 standards, right, to begin with. And where we have, various supply chain events represented in the formats, right? And yes, there are a few gaps here and there with GS1 that we filled. So my question to you is, and we have been working closely with them, but my question to you is, when you say you're working with GS1, are they aware that, you know, you have this standard, for example, for location, and how close is the current interlock? I mean, I'm just speaking purely from a standards perspective, just afraid there's going to be this location standards there and here, right?
Yeah, and so like most things in the space, it's a journey. And so at our symposium in May, we had representatives from IEEE ISTO, GS1, and ANSI X12, which is focused really on rail EDI information, all up on stage talking in a collaborative manner about how we need to work together to make sure that these standards align with what's already highly adopted and just work towards modification. And so I can say we're working at a high level to create meaningful collaborative efforts between what we're currently producing and what's currently within glossaries of standards like GS1. But I would say in terms of the location component that BITA has produced and existing GS1 location components, philosophically, we're pretty close. There are some kind of kinks that we're looking to work out and are part of that, the translation of the location specification that we'll be looking to do over the next quarter based upon the learnings and conversations that we've had with GS1 and others.
Right. No, that makes sense. And because I've looked at their specs, and that's why. So, and as particularly, you know, you presented a JSON version, as particularly they look at their JSON specs, I think that will be released next year sometime. This will become all the more important too. It'll be good to have convergence here, right?
Yep.
That was my comment.
Really good point, Gopal. Thank you. And so, you know, what the output of these standards groups, you know, what it really starts with is coming up with an actual text-based definition of what something like location means or shipment means, and then translating that generally through lengthy conversations and working through use cases to build out UML models that structures the data in a meaningful way, and then making sure that meshes with the realities of existing business regulations and operations. And so it's a challenging task, but we really believe that it's going to be quite fruitful and valuable for industry to be able to adopt this. And this is kind of another model that's breaking out some of the information associated to our shipment spec and how that interacts with things like party location, equipment, and order. Really excited to see all this come together and looking forward to being able to update this with finalized specifications moving forward. So let me move forward a little bit. I don't think that we need to hammer out too much because I think we've got a pretty advanced understanding within this room about what the benefits are for this technology. But you know, I think the biggest thing that I can really hone in on is around risk management and interoperability. And this is, I think, broadly around blockchain technology. It's about the optimization of trust between parties that don't necessarily know one another or actually are not face to face. And so this is some interesting information from one of our BITA member companies, Agoric, that's working on some really interesting smart contracts and interoperability challenges. It's talking about the cost of trust globally being as high as 35% of global GDP, $30 trillion with 12 zeros. And similarly, the World Trade Organization, and some might scoff because some of their predictions on global trade have been pretty far off, but they believe, and some of the research suggests, that highly adopted use of smart contracts might increase world GDP by up to 5%, really driving interoperability between producers and consumers, and really driving an increase in global trade volume, which would benefit so many people. Similarly, I don't think we need to hark on this too much, but the use cases around this technology build upon each other. So whether it's authentication, making sure you know who's doing what, or chain of custody, whether that's of data or of physical goods and products, and then adding in a transactional layer, these things are really going to be game changers. Similarly, we talked about the challenges of unidirectional nature of EDI communications. Blockchain is really going to change this. Some really interesting use cases are emerging around fuel and fuel surcharges, and in different financial transactions that can be really modified. The use of those can be really modified by leveraging smart contracts. Really drive understanding of custody and then the actual delivery of goods. And so I think one of the challenges that we're facing across industries in the adoption of these smart contracts is the of translating legal doctrine into code. And I think what the joke is that right now you need a contract for your smart contract. And I think hopefully we'll see international legislative and regulatory proposals over the next couple of years that allow for the global implementation and enforceability of smart contracts, where we're having to work through both code and prose. I think right now is what we're seeing is kind of the use of these hybrid smart contracts, where it's both print contract, leveraging data from systems, pulling in information provided by oracles to allow for dispute resolution and exception management. This goes back to my previous slide, so where I think we are. We're still working through some of these early growing pains, but I think we're at a moment of an opportunity to really mature the space if regulators can come together with industry participants and technology builders to make this work for everyone involved. And so I'm excited to see where this goes soon. Just encourage everybody to check out our website. It's bita.studio. At that site, you can actually see the initial white paper that kind of gives a roadmap of where we think this is going, and examine the location specification, and also find out other ways to get involved, like attending the symposium coming up in Chicago on November 14th. So just kind of concluding, this isn't just a tech play. This is really a business model shift. I really try to hammer this in when I present to executives that aren't so familiar with this. And just want to thank you all for allowing me to be here, and look forward to hearing some conversation. Thanks.
Thanks, Patrick. So at this point, I'll leave it open for questions from the group here. Anybody have any questions?
Hello, Patrick. I'd be curious, what is the sort of the overlap with the GS1? Where is it different? Where is it similar? I didn't quite understand sort of the, you know, what's unique.
So as we kind of continue these conversations, there seems to be a lot of overlap, particularly for the commercial transaction side of these supply chain processes. But it's not all encompassing. And so we're also engaged in conversations with other standards development bodies that represent standards that have been adopted for ocean shipping, rail shipping, other geographic specific standards, other sector specific standards. So standards associated to like the US government's use of supply chain and transportation processes and the United Nations also. I think that's, you know, one of the challenges, but also one of the opportunities of this work is that there are so many existing standards out there, and none of them seem to really be universal in applicability. But this technology seems to hold the potential to allow for the merging of many of these standards organizations and their bodies of work. So in terms of GS1, there seems to be a lot of overlap in specific areas.
Hello, Patrick.
Hi.
Yeah, you had mentioned the network OSI model as a comparison to explain the beta, like you're planning to develop something on that manner. Can you just reiterate on that aspect a bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the simplest kind of idea is that we're really not looking to build out applications. We're really trying to create the open source and royalty-free data standards that will allow for the infrastructure layer for different types of applications to play well with one another and also with legacy technologies.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I had a question on who are some of the key drivers that started this? What companies are driving it? Where I didn't understand sort of the genesis.
So one of the original idea was spawned from a conversation between Craig Fuller at FreightWaves, who is the son of Max Fuller from US Express, the largest LTL trucking company in the US. And Ken McCraig from McLeod Software, and quickly expanded to include conversation or membership from trucking companies like J.B. Hunt, parcel carriers, FedEx, UPS, air cargo representation from Delta, rail representation from BNSF, and just that kind of comprised the core body that grew into the founding members of the BITA Standards Council, which is focused on the development of those open source standards, which the original idea, like I was saying, is around trucking, but quickly expanded to all the different transport modes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. If there aren't any other questions, I'd love to kind of put a question to the audience.
Absolutely. And
as I was mentioning kind of in my opening comments, I've been hearing some really interesting developments with Hyperledger Avalon and Hyperledger Vesu. I'd like to just, you know, kind of see within those on the call, what are y'all seeing? What are y'all working with? What have been challenges within your own enterprises? Where do you see this working? And that's open. That's open to anyone. So, maybe if I reframe the question, do y'all see this technology being adopted at your enterprises? just more broadly.
Are you referring to Avalon and Besso in general? Or
I just mean blockchain technology broadly. I know a lot of companies are experimenting with it, but members on this call, are y'all seeing actual adoption amongst the companies y'all are working with?
So I can add on to that personally from my experience is that what we find is, you know, they could benefit, but there are some challenges in the way, and a lot of that has to do with the existing systems and their existing infrastructure. So that digital transformation has to take a more progressive, iterative approach before they can genuinely utilize blockchain to its fullest capacity. So that's what I've noticed in a lot of our clients and prospects.
Yeah, on my end, I can say that we're working with, at Wipro, we're working with Intel around TCF and Avalon to test it now and see how it would be integrated into Sawtooth and Fabric and other applications in the future. You know, honestly, we've seen very little application of a lot of the Hyperledger suites beyond Fabric, especially related to supply chain. I think the biggest issues that our clients have had have been integrating new systems around their existing enterprise systems, namely the ones that they've bought from SAP and Oracle. That's typically what's driving them more than other technology issues, that they have most of their enterprise architecture built on SAP or Oracle, and then they having an issue in getting APIs out of those SAP or Oracle systems so that they can create a good book of record that they need to manage their supply chain. But we are seeing more and more pickup, and I would say a lot of it's more focused around asset serialization and asset tracking and around invoice and product management. I think the EDI messages in the middle remain the golden goose that people are largely afraid to touch in a lot of areas.
Yeah, I like that. EDI is the golden goose.
This is Gokul. I can comment. I can make a comment from what you're seeing from the IBM side is, you know, you're probably familiar with TradeLens and FoodTrust, right? Some for big blockchain production solutions. So TradeLens, there is obviously, I think it's much more, it seems much more close to, you know, logistics and the kind of things you're talking about. Very good traction there, right? I mean, very soon, I think about 40% or 50% of the container shipments data will be on TradeLens, right? I mean, it's a pretty, because major companies, including Maersk and others, are already onboarded, and we are built on Fabric, right? I believe Fabric and solution on top of it. Similarly, on the IBM FoodTrust side, we have a lot of companies. I mean, definitely it's close to 200 now that have onboarded, and we have the whole solution running in production. Yes, absolutely. The pace at which the onboarding is happening, because of the data integration issues that you mentioned, is a little bit slower than what we had anticipated, but we're doing it in chunks. And also, this is where standards are really helping us, right? Because so that everybody speaks the same language, and it's such an important thing for scaling. And therefore, my, you know, my questions are very focused on, in terms of when you said you're coming with more specs, it'd be good to have a single standard throughout the industry.
Yeah, I definitely feel that pain point, you know, being able to produce one very highly adopted standard would create just so much more efficiency. And that's I'm hearing that from many different participants, including standards development organizations.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello, Patrick. I have a question. This is Abhishek this side.
Hi, Abhishek.
Since you have mentioned about developing specs for such as bill of lading, so in case of third-party logistics where that forms the intermediate between the carriers and the shipper, is there any standard format that you are planning to have for the shippers to share their data with the 3PL logistic companies?
So that's really what we're working on, is making sure that we capture the information that will allow for those handoffs between producers, transport providers, and final owners of goods. And the biggest challenge is that existing bill of ladings are vary widely between geographies, languages, and transport modes. And so it's almost an audacious task to take on. But we think that we're making really good progress. And I don't know if Mohan, if you're still on the call, but you can probably speak to some of the work that we're accomplishing.
Sure. I guess like our first goal was to see what is out there, right? I mean, like we first came up with what our stakeholders need. So working with, let's say, FedEx and a few others were there on, you know, Amplifex, so on. We first came up with the basic set of attributes that are of common interest to the participants. And then the second phase of it, obviously, was to, am I answering your right question here, Patrick? You know, and the second phase was to see, like, you know, are we duplicating the efforts that others are doing? Or are we, or how can we align? And so we looked at various standards and see how can our business objects that we are defining align with some of those standards. Because one of the key issues is like different participants in this network are using various standards. And so we use this as an opportunity to align all the different standards, just the key elements that are of interest to the parties in the work group or as members of the beta work group. So that's how we've been progressing. Does that answer the question, Abhishek?
Yes, pretty much, I guess. We are still in the building block stage for the specifications, so yeah.
Absolutely, yes. And we're all, you know, we started off with what is out there, then how do we align with the standards, and now we are looking at various aspects of how does this object look different when we move into a decentralized way of executing the transportation processes. So a lot of conversation around, you know, in the traditional sense, there were like physical signatures, documents were presented, there was misalignment. So here we are now looking at what would be the various attributes that demonstrate trust within the business process. A lot of conversation was centered around, you know, the handoffs. Do we have to have digital signatures in place? Do we, at what point, what are the events that drive these different aspects of the business process? So that's that is also part of all of our discussions. So it's not just about defining an existing object as is, but looking at how do we transform that object to work in a decentralized environment.
Great, Mohan, thank you for that color.
Thank you.
All right, we have about 9 minutes left.
Yeah, but I do want to add to Patrick's question earlier. I think this is the first time I'm, you know, we are Chainyard, we are members of Hyperledger. So, you know, I work with IBM extensively. We do test fabric as part of the community, but we've been working along with IBM. Gokul, you mentioned Maersk, Trade Lens and Food Trust, but Trust Your Supplier is another joint venture with IBM. That was launched about 7 weeks back. It's another aspect, blockchain solution where it's a single source of supplier identity, and it leverages some of the concepts that we already defined in the beta party business object standards. So we're trying to somehow align that object with what we have in Trust Your Supplier, which is also all about parties that deliver various services, be it transport, be it driving, be it manufacturing, be it a supplier of parts or whatever. But Trust Your Supplier is supposed to be a trusted network for that buyers can leverage, and we are working on that space. And this is one of the things that closely aligns with what Vita is doing in the party business object work group. Your question of Bezu, as Chainyard, we have worked with Pega's Pantheon. Pantheon is the original Ethereum client that Pega Systems developed. So as Chainyard, we have worked on a number of projects which leverages the in a private blockchain setting, the Pega Pantheon client, but Pantheon has been submitted because as Hyperledger Bezu, and I'm actually quite excited because one of the things that I'm looking forward to is how can an Ethereum client play in a permissioned blockchain network? In fact, how does it play in a hybrid blockchain network where portions of it is public facing and portions of it can operate in a permissioned environment?
Thanks. That's a good point. Interesting. Anybody else? We have about 5 minutes left.
Just want to say, great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you all for having me. Y'all can find me on LinkedIn if you want to move the conversation forward or have any follow-up questions. My email is also on the BITA website.
Can we expect subsequent sessions like this?
Yeah. I was thinking maybe we'll follow up in a couple of months just to see how progress is going and how folks can get involved and also the pilots or if there's something that this group can contribute as well. So we'll stay in touch, Patrick.
Yeah, I'd really enjoy that. Maybe at the beginning of next year, I could come and we can maybe have some of the work group chairs actually present also.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
And post this on the wiki for those to watch again or share. And Patrick, also I'll need your slides to post too, if you don't mind.
Yep, no problem. I'll send them your way.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you all.